Welcome to the Optimized Paleo Podcast by Paleo Valley, where you'll discover groundbreaking tips and strategies straight from the mouths of experts in the field of health and wellness that you can apply right away to cultivate the vibrant health you deserve. We'll be your hosts. I'm Chaz Smith, along with my amazing wife,
Autumn Smith, and we can't wait to help you take your health and life to a whole new level. In addition to this podcast, we're also the co-founders of Paleo Valley, a company we founded to create unique products that always prioritize your health over our profit. Our mission is to bring nutrient density back to the forefront by creating whole food products teeming with the most nutrient-rich foods while also eliminating problematic ingredients such as refined sugar, gluten, grains, and soy. We have a growing line of nourishing products that we think you'll love, including our award-winning 100% grass-fed beef sticks with probiotics in four delicious flavors, our organic super greens powder, the only superfood powder on the market containing 19 superfoods and absolutely no potentially harmful cereal grasses, our grass-fed organ complex, and our Paleo Valley superfood bars with grass-fed collagen protein that are really low in natural sugar, yet bursting with flavor. Come on over and visit us at paleovalley.com.
Hi, friends. If you have ever been confused by vitamin A, what it's good for, whether or not beta carotene is the same as retinol, what to make of all of this controversy around vitamin A, you're going to love today's show. We have a super passionate retinol advocate over here, Morley Robbins. He is one of the people who always makes our shows go viral. We did one on vitamin C, we've done one on iron, and now we're doing it on retinol. He's also called the magnesium man. So this man has a command of the literature around these minerals and other vitamins like retinol that I haven't seen a lot. And so this is his third time on the show. So welcome, Morley. I cannot wait to get into the nitty gritty with you today.
That's great. Well, Autumn, thanks so much for the invite and really excited to talk about this because, as you said, it's a great source of confusion. It's unbelievable how there's so many twists and turns and there's a lot of confusing articles on the internet. And it's a fascinating subject nonetheless.
It absolutely is. And when the first time I thought about, would I ever do a podcast devoted to vitamin A? I'd have probably said no way. But when I got his deck and looked at the research and I thought, wow, this is too good not to share. And this is really important information. So again, we're going to dive into some myths and how you can use it. And Morley, before we get into your story and why you're so passionate about it in the first place, I always like to start with kind of one lighthearted question that just gives people a taste for who you are. That question today is, what was the best day for you this year so far?
Oh, great question. Best day, I think it was the day we moved to Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Yeah,
really. We had been thinking for a couple of years of moving, and it all just snapped together, and it came together very quickly. We were actually here in the area in July for some meetings, and just had a very receptive audience, and they were very intrigued at what we were saying and said, would you consider moving here? We were like, oh my gosh. So within a matter of 6 weeks, we were moving our belongings from Louisiana to North Carolina. And we've just not looked back. It's been a very, very exciting journey. And we're feel very comfortable here and very excited to be a part of this very, very vibrant and very switched on community. So it's been very exciting.
That's amazing. I love that answer. Okay, Morley. So now that we know a little bit, tell us, why are you so passionate about retinol, but also about mineral balance in general? How did you get here?
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to an interview recently with Elon Musk. A lot of people are familiar with him. Very savvy guy, very successful. And he was talking about the concept of the first principle. This is actually something that Aristotle taught. And he says, you got to take things back to the very base understanding that everyone can agree on, and then you begin to work out from there. Well, the base issue here on this planet is we live on a planet with oxygen. And oxygen is actually a poison if you don't know how to work with it. It's a very toxic substance, but a lot of people don't know that there was a time on the planet when there was no oxygen. You go back many billions of years ago, there was no oxygen. And when oxygen began to appear on the planet, it was actually, according to the astrobiologists, it was 2.45 billion years ago. How they know that, I have no idea.
I know, it's like...
I'm looking at my watch like, okay. Where'd you get the 0.25? And it's like, but in any event, it's called the Great Oxygen Event. And when that occurred, it was phytoplankton in the sea splitting water, and it gave off oxygen. And when the oxygen began, the concentration began to build, it wiped out 99% of life on this planet. Because everything was living on iron. Iron's the most dominant metal on this planet. It's 36% of the Earth's composition. So oxygen and iron don't play well together. We call it rust. We know that.
Yeah.
And when that event took place many, many years ago, there were three things that emerged on the planet very quickly and in rapid succession. Copper. Multi-copper oxidases, which is a very sophisticated enzyme that's copper dependent, that turns oxygen into water so we can release energy. We can't live on this planet without that enzyme. So we got copper, multi-copper oxidases. And the third, which is fascinating, is called cholesterol. So cholesterol has been on this planet for billions of years. And yet we've been trained like circus bears to believe that it's a toxin. Well, what they forgot to tell us is that cholesterol is a very sophisticated substance. It requires 11 molecules of oxygen to make one molecule of cholesterol. So cholesterol is an oxygen sink. And our body depends on it, especially when we're under stress. And so when Eisenhower had his first heart attack in September of 55, the nation was put on a low-fat diet. Get rid of cholesterol. Got to get it out of the system because it was causing heart disease. And we now know 65 years later that that was all in error.
Right.
But as a nation and as a planet, we were held hostage by this fear of cholesterol and fear of fat. And what is fat? It stands for from animal tissue.
Yeah.
And the fats that come from animal tissue are immensely important, especially the one we're going to talk about today called retinol. And that's real vitamin A, as opposed to the precursors like beta carotenes. But what's important is when they put us on a low cholesterol diet, they wiped out all the sources of retinol. Eggs, butter, cream, all of these rich sources of retinol were literally wiped off of our diet. And I believe that it was one of the most tragic events in the history of nutrition in this country, because it altered our physiology like that overnight. And the reason why it's so important, and the reason why I'm so passionate about this, is that, again, we live on a planet with oxygen. Iron likes to carry it. That's where 80% of our iron in our body is carrying oxygen. Most of it's in our red blood cells. Some of it's in our muscle cells. But iron is carrying oxygen. Can't live without it. Thank God we have it. But the chef, you know, iron's the waiter, but the chef is copper inside the mitochondria, activating the oxygen, releasing water to release energy. And there's more. Don't go yet. Copper, there's a whole spectrum network of copper-dependent enzymes that deactivate the oxidants. Well, everybody knows what an antioxidant is. We've been using that term for decades now.
Yeah.
Well, oxidants are oxygen molecules that have been tweaked. They're angry, they're grumpy, and they're very destructive inside human tissue. And so the reason why retinol is so special is that it enables two key proteins. They're called copper loading proteins or copper pumps. One is called ATP7A. It's also called the Menkes protein. And there's another called ATP7B. It's called the Wilson protein. And people may have heard of Menkes disease or Wilson's disease. And these are some of the earliest genetic defects that occurred in the human population. And it's retinol that allows those enzymes to load copper so that we can have bioavailable copper to make those enzymes work to deal with this oxygen that is on this planet. And so I bring things back to the very first principle of we got to deal with this oxygen. Yeah. And one of the most important things that retinol does is it loads copper to make it usable, but it also has its own capacity to stop oxidative stress. Mm. Now, oxidative stress is a chemical term for rust. It's just a fancy way of saying rust. But there's a whole series of ways in which the body does engage in this rusting process. Mm-hmm. And so,
can you give us some examples of why that might happen?
Yeah. So what happens is when oxygen does get tweaked, it becomes what's called superoxide, or it can become hydrogen peroxide. When that happens, it can interact with the fats in our cell membranes and the membranes around the organelles. So every component of our cells has what's called a bilipid membrane. Mm-hmm. It's two layers of fat around mitochondria, around the nucleus, around the lysosome, around the cell itself. And the way the cells communicate is by touching each other. And so it's really important for that bilipid membrane to be healthy. Well, if that bilipid membrane gets rusty, it's called lipid peroxidation. Well, then the cells don't communicate right. And then things can start to get inside the cell that shouldn't be in there, or things can start to get inside the organelles that shouldn't be there. And what's one of the most powerful ways to stop that lipid peroxidation is retinol. Mm-hmm. Retinol in and of itself is an antioxidant. It's a very powerful antioxidant. And it's, again, it's like when they took it out of the food system, it's like it boggles the mind.
I know. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So of course, removing cholesterol, there's a bunch of unintended consequences. Whenever you do one thing with the dietary, you know, like you're doing several things because there are so many dietary components. That's awesome. Take me a step back before that and tell us what tweaks, what creates, what are the kind of catalysts to this oxidative process?
Well, you probably should be sitting down when I start to talk about that. I know you
like
to stand.
Yeah.
I know. Well, no. I just don't want you to fall when I start to tell you what's going on. things like ascorbic acid are very reactive inside the body. People have been trained to think it's wonderful. It's not. But one of the things that really changed in 1941 in the U.S., the U.K., and in Canada was they started adding iron filings to the food system, to the wheat flour. Mm-hmm. And what they forgot to tell us was that it was those iron filings. Again, we're not talking about organic iron. I think the listeners are just mystified. Well, they couldn't possibly be using iron filings. That's exactly what they're using. It's inorganic iron, and it's highly reactive in a human tissue, and it creates a chain reaction of oxidative stress. So that in and of itself changed everything. Then you start to pull out retinol. And this is a natural antioxidant that allowed the master antioxidant called ceruloplasmin, which is supposed to be protecting us. Well, if you don't have retinol, you can't have ceruloplasmin. And so suddenly we were left completely exposed to the agents that were being added to the food system. Well, then if you don't have enough bioavailable copper to make ceruloplasmin, well, then you've got to use a backup antioxidant called estrogen. Well, estrogen can be very highly reactive, as you know. It has its own series of effects inside the body. Well, then they added things like sugar. Sugar is, I've been doing a very deep dive on diabetes over the last several months. For the listeners to kind of get to the shorthand.
Yeah.
Sugar is a sweet form of iron. It's a very toxic substance that in moderation is fine. But they started when they, again, what happened? They took fat out of the diet. When they took fat out of the diet, it lost its flavor. So what did they put in? Lots of sugar. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in George Washington's day, our ancestors would have eaten 3 pounds of granulated sugar cane a year. And today we're eating a couple hundred pounds of granulated sugar, but it's not sugar cane. So there's been an enormous explosion in the amount of sugar that we're exposed to now. And our bodies can't handle it. Our pancreas certainly can't handle it because the pancreas is copper dependent. Mm. The pancreas runs on copper. The liver runs on copper. It's absolutely amazing. And what did they do? When they started adding iron into the food system, they started pulling copper out. Mm. Copper deficiency is the number one nutrient deficiency on the farm. Mm. And it's been that way for 60 years.
What about in the diet of humans? Are we seeing a lot of copper deficiency? Because in this space, I hear so much about copper excess.
Right. Again, a lot of confusion about that. Yeah. So one of the world's experts on copper is Leslie. It's a guy, but his name is Leslie Clevay, K-L-E-V-A-Y. One of the great scientists on this planet, still living. He's retired now. He wrote a very important article in 2011 on the prevalence or the presence of copper in the American diet. Back at the turn of the century, early 1900s, it was not uncommon for people to get between 2.5 to 3 milligrams of copper a day.
Okay.
Now we're lucky if we get 9/10 of 1 milligram a day. And if you don't have retinol in your diet, if you think beta carotene is the same as retinol and it's not, or if you think that all those synthetic retinoids, they're just great, they're not. Again, you've got to have the real deal, which is what Mother Nature wants in our body. And the best way to get retinol is through beef liver, grass-fed beef liver, or through cod liver oil, you know, mm-hmm. properly prepared cod liver oil. And so a lot of people don't have access to those, or they're not a part of their diet. So from a dietary standpoint, there is rampant shortages of bioavailable copper. But let me explain the confusion with your listeners who think they are copper toxic. Yeah. I read a very interesting article a couple of weeks ago. I was at the Weston A. Price conference in outside of Dallas. Really amazing meeting. Sally Fallon should be very proud of what the faculty that she put together. One of my first students, Ben Edwards, he's a physician in Lubbock, Texas, was giving a talk about what he had learned from the root cause protocol. It was pretty cool.
Aww,
yeah, really, really fun presentation. And the thing is that I was reading an article that weekend about a study of mental health issues, particularly schizophrenia, and the confusion about that. And at one point in the study, they noted that there was a rise of copper in the blood, which is very common. A lot of people talk about that, particularly in mental health circles.
Yeah.
And this team decided to go a step farther. Well, they measured the copper in the central nervous system, in the spinal fluid. Very rare that someone would do that. The copper was perfect in the cerebral spinal fluid. Well, then it was fascinating.
Yeah.
Then they thought there have been studies of people with schizophrenia who've died, and let's see what they've found in the way of copper levels in the brain tissue from autopsy.
Mm, nice.
Perfect copper in the brain tissue. So we have perfect copper in the brain, perfect copper in the cerebral spinal fluid, and elevated copper in the blood. And one of the lead researchers said, apparently the medications we're using is affecting ceruloplasmin and causing the copper to come out of the protein, and that's exactly what it does. And there's a rich legacy of research that proves that that's exactly what it is. And so people don't know that ascorbic acid blows up ceruloplasmin to make copper come out. Don't know that antibiotics blow up ceruloplasmin to make copper come out. Don't know that antipsychotics blow up ceruloplasmin. Don't know that bioidentical hormone replacement therapy blows up ceruloplasmin to make copper come out. Don't know that birth control pills do the same thing. Don't know that citric acid does the same thing. And so everyone's been trained to zero in on, oh, my copper's high in the blood, let me attack it. Not knowing that it means that the protein ceruloplasmin has been breached, which means that the copper-dependent enzymes aren't working right, which then means that iron is building in the tissue quietly, not observed, because the optics of medicine are to measure iron in the blood. So the iron will look low in the blood. It's going to look low in the blood when in fact it's high in the tissue. And the optics to get to the tissue level require either a needle biopsy or a Tesla 2 MRI. Well, the first is very painful, and the second is very expensive, and most practitioners won't do that. And so because there's confusion around how the body uses bioavailable copper to regulate iron to keep it from getting lost in the tissue, then we have a lot of uncertainty and a lot of confusion. And in clinical circles, in internet circles, in alternative healing circles, and that's where a lot of the disconnect is in trying to understand copper, bioavailable copper, and retinol.
Oh, man. So, wow. There's just a lot that you just said in there. So what I'm trying to break it down is it's kind of like the cholesterol thing. It's indicative. It's a symptom rather than the cause of these issues. And of course, it's our, I don't know, I wouldn't say arrogance around the fact that we think we understand more than we do, but it's kind of like that. But I love you because you bring it down to the nuance, and it's you have to get into these nitty gritties. And I heard you in a different talk, and you said you heard about a researcher who spoke three languages. It was like iron and copper and magnesium. And you're right. These minerals are so complex, and the way they affect one another is so complex. I think we need more reverence and like respect for that. And so that's why I'm so excited that you're on this show. Like you said, we need the copper. We need it functioning well. Most of us don't have that. We need the vitamin A. If you have comment about that, please. But I want to kind of go to vitamin A too, before or after you answer the question. Did you find a way? I know the last time you were here, the goal for you was to create a way to measure your iron, because you're saying ferritin is not a good indicator. So did you do that?
Still a work in progress. We do. We now have a lab in India, in southern India, that's willing to do what's called the ferrooxidase colorimetric assay. That's a lot of jargon for the listeners. What it does is when ceruloplasmin expresses the ferrooxidase enzyme, it's a very bright, it's a sky blue color. It's this vibrant blue. It's like the blue behind you on the wall. Okay. Yep. So that's ceruloplasmin. That cerulo means blue. Blue blood, blue plasma. That's really what it means. And when it was first discovered, they were startled by how bright it really was. So we do now have a lab. And the researcher that you were talking about, who speaks three languages, his name is Jamie Collins. He's at the University of Florida in Gainesville.
Nice.
And he has told me that he will do that test for humans. But the logistics, so we've got two labs now that'll do it, but now we got to get over the logistical hurdle of getting blood from where you live in Boulder or wherever I live in, you know, Chapel Hill, to a lab in southern India or to Gainesville, Florida. So we're still working on that. But what we use as a surrogate for that is, I refer to it as the Full Monty Iron Panel.
Okay, tell me what that is.
And it measures 12 different markers. We look at hemoglobin level. We look at transferrin, which is a protein that carries iron. We look at serum iron. We look at copper. We look at zinc. We look at magnesium in the red blood cell. We look at vitamin A, retinol level, and we also look at vitamin D. And what a lot of people would benefit from is everyone's so fixated on vitamin D. Oh, my, you know, I'm vitamin D deficient. What they don't know is that when vitamin D is low, that means they have inflammation. Mm-hmm. And you can take bucketfuls of vitamin D and you're not going to correct the inflammation. Mm. What's causing the inflammation? Lack of copper, lack of magnesium, and too much iron.
Ooh, I love it. Thank you. Thank you. And if you guys want more information on the iron thing, we did a podcast about this. So go back. I'm going to link to that in the show notes. It's really, really, really mind blowing. But I just want to piggyback off of what you just said. I think it's a perfect transition because I really want to talk about this anemia thing. You write into me all the time and tell me.
Really? You really want to talk about anemia?
Well, kind of, yeah. Okay. People write in and say, your liver, your Paleo Valley organ complex, I was never able to get rid of my anemia no matter what kind of supplements I took. And according, he sent me this deck, these slides. And I learned in 1934, Nobel Peace Prize in Physiology went to a man who cured anemia.
Three physicians. Three physicians shared the Nobel Prize for using beef liver. Yeah,
I think it was like Whipple and or what Whipley.
Right. Whipple, I'm impressed. Minot, Murphy, and Whipple are the three physicians. These guys were top of the pecking order in physician research circles, and they got a Nobel Prize for using beef liver. Are you kidding me? Oh my God!
So tell me more, Lee. Like you were saying, I mean, there is this relationship. Why is retinol, vitamin A, so important for reversing?
Okay. Yeah. So it's actually fascinating.
Yes.
Have the listeners get their personal edition of the Merck manual. I'm sure everyone has one, right? Because they love to talk about their symptoms. But when you go into the Merck manual, there's a whole section of conditions that begin with the letter A, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Almost all of them are solved by eating retinol. Mm. Vitamin A. So we're talking about anemia.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Anemia. Yeah. And the study that people will be fascinated by is by Robert Hodges from 1973. It's a mind-blowing. It was in that deck that I sent you. I don't know whether it caught your eye or not.
But, yeah. The one in rats, maybe?
Yeah. Well, actually, this was actually a human study. But it's an amazing study where they denied people retinol, and they wanted to see what happened to their hemoglobin.
Right.
It absolutely just tanks. It just goes right down. And then they decided to do what everyone's been trained to do is, oh, get some iron. You know, take an iron supplement, get an iron infusion, whatever. And what they track is that there is this rise of hemoglobin for 6 weeks. It only lasts 6 weeks. And then it just falls back down. Mm. And then they start to introduce retinol, and the hemoglobin takes off like a rocket again. And what people need to understand is that there are many there actually are eight enzymes that are required to make heme. Most people don't know that. Mm-hmm. The very first enzyme is called ALAS. It's retinol dependent. Mm. You can't start the process without retinol. And three of the eight towards the end are copper dependent because they involve using oxygen. Anytime you got to work with oxygen, you better have copper nearby. Mm-hmm. But the last enzyme is called ferrochelatase. And it's a crane and it carries an iron atom. And it moves the iron and drops it into hemoglobin. Mm. Who's the crane operator? It's copper. Mm. Copper's the crane operator. So we got retinol at the front end. We got copper at the back end. And we can't make hemoglobin without it. And yes, iron is involved. I'm not a Luddite. But the thing is, I did a presentation recently, and I found there's 12 different places in the process of making blood where copper is absolutely essential.
Wow.
And that's not commonly known. That's certainly not taught. And the conditioned response is, I was just chatting with a house guest about it. She was asking, well, when you're anemic, you get tired and you gotta have iron. And I said, yeah, iron carries the oxygen, but we gotta have the copper to activate it. And that's the piece that's been missing from all of these internet sites and all of these articles, is getting people to realize that you can't make heme unless you're inside the mitochondria at complex 4 that's run by copper. Wow. The very process of making heme is, it's so central to the process. And what's fascinating is that one of the biggest problems we have today is a lot of people have this buildup of iron in their tissue. We've talked about that.
Yeah.
I call it stuck iron. Mm-hmm. Well, the iron isn't just in the cell, it's in the mitochondria. Mm-hmm. And this article that I was reading this morning, again, I never know where I'm going to go, but this is a fascinating article.
I love it.
And they were talking about, there's two critical ways in which iron inside the mitochondria are used. We got to make heme, and we got to make what are called iron sulfur clusters. People may have heard that term. They're very important components of proteins and enzymes. Well, both of those functions, making heme and making iron sulfur clusters, are copper dependent. And what this author was saying is that, he said, well, sometimes the mitochondria just can't make heme and can't make iron sulfur clusters, and so the iron starts to build in the mitochondria. Well, then that starts to change the pH of the mitochondria. Well, then it can't activate oxygen, right? Because the copper is getting choked by all the iron. And wow. And the term that's used in internet sites, in alternative circles and allopathic circles, is mitochondrial dysfunction. And they'll use that vague term, mitochondrial dysfunction, and not tell you that what's really going on is the mitochondria are getting rusty.
Yeah.
Now, let's take it one step farther. The anemia that people are worried about is because iron isn't circulating right, because it doesn't have bioavailable copper. Well, there's a whole nother pathway that people may have heard of called autophagy.
Yeah.
Right? What's the first letter in autophagy?
A.
Right.
Look at me.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Ding, ding, ding. So do you think maybe retinol might be really important for autophagy?
Ooh, you better tell us about that. Our audience loves
yeah.
a lot. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So everyone's doing their intermittent fasting now, right? People are totally switched on about that. Well, here's a fascinating article. No to autophagy, referring to nitric oxide.
Oh, okay.
Right? Play on words. No to autophagy. Well, guess what builds in the body if you don't have retinol? Nitric oxide. Mm. And nitric oxide is like a gear in the works of autophagy.
Mm.
Okay? So the beauty of autophagy is inside the cell, has a stomach. And that stomach is called a lysosome, L-Y-S-O-S-O-M-E, and it's ridiculously important. Mm-hmm. And there are enzymes inside that lysosome that allow for different cellular parts to be recycled. Well, one of them, there's a very close proximity of mitochondria and the lysosome. Think the lysosome might be important for recycling mitochondria?
Probably.
Yeah. And what happens is, in retinol deficient animals, like you and me when we were younger, we don't turn over the mitochondria, and that iron builds inside the mitochondria because it's not being recycled properly, because autophagy is not taking place, because there's not enough retinol in the diet. Oh, and those enzymes inside the lysosome, they're copper dependent. They're called hydrolase enzymes, and they really require copper in order to work right. And if that lysosome isn't working right in what are called recycling macrophages, and right. those are the pack men that like to gobble up things. Well, there's a whole class of enzymes that likes to recycle red blood cells, And if they don't recycle the iron right, autophagy doesn't happen in the lysosome. And there's more.
Yeah, keep going.
The lysosome is supposed to be able to churn and burn the ferritin inside the cell. Everybody knows what ferritin is. It's a storage protein that holds iron. But what most people don't know is that you can't load iron into ferritin unless you have ceruloplasmin. That's a very important piece of the puzzle. But the body needs to recycle this ferritin. There's all of these cellular parts need to be recycled. And autophagy is what drives that recycling program. Well, if the stomach of the cell is loaded with mitochondria that it can't get rid of, and it's loaded with ferritin that it can't get rid of, what happens is the iron gets deposited in the lysosome in something called lipofuscin, which is a sticky, gummy mess of iron and carbohydrates and fat. It's a mess. And the ferritin protein gets secreted out of the cell and goes into the blood. Mm. That's called serum ferritin. Mm. It's empty shotgun shells. Mm. The iron's been discharged in the tissue of the stomach. And there are medications that people are told to take, especially thyroid medications, where they say, get your ferritin up to 100. Now think about that for a minute. What they're really saying is they want a preponderance of iron in the tissue that's showing up as empty shotgun shells for that medication to work. That's a scary moment.
Yeah.
People don't understand. If they don't understand these three languages, this magnesium, this copper, and this iron, they don't understand those three languages, and they believe what they're reading on the internet, it's a very scary moment for a lot of people. And I was just talking to a new client today. She just found the website and she was very excited about it. And what happened with her, back to your question about anemia, she had very heavy menstrual bleeding in her 40s. Yeah. But what did she do? She got an ablation. So she stopped the menstrual loss. And I said to her, I said, Michelle, do you realize that there's two reasons why women outlive men? She said, no, I didn't know that. I said, well, the first reason is women are smarter. That's an established fact.
I mean, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah. But the second reason is that women have a monthly blood loss where you're donating iron every month, like clockwork, right? Every 28 days. Well, she stopped donating. Iron starts building in her tissue. She doesn't know this. This has been going on for 10 years.
Oh, no.
Nobody told her that she should be donating blood. So she's looking anemic on the blood work, right? Right? This happens all the time. Yeah. She starts to get anxiety. Hmm. She starts to get depression. Then she finds out that she has a kidney stone. They're very painful. I've only had one many years ago. It was like giving birth to a watermelon. It's like, ow. And so the other thing is that she has osteoporosis now. They discovered that she has osteoporosis when they were doing the testing for the kidney stone. Mm-hmm. And I said, let me walk you through this. And I explained to her how iron was causing her depression, her anxiety, her kidney stone, and her osteoporosis. She was fascinated. She said, this makes so much sense to me. And again, in the absence of retinol, that's exactly what happens to iron. Iron starts to act out in the body because it's not being properly regulated the way Mother Nature intended it. And one of the best sources of retinol is beef liver and cod liver oil. Those are the two richest sources. And the fact that people perk up the way they do with your products, it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
But the power of it is I've got 25 vegan clients taking desiccated beef liver.
Really? Okay.
That's how desperate they are to feel better.
Okay, that's, yes. Okay, two things in there. So cool. I love the connections and I love the detail. First thing, mental health, is there literature around this kind of iron overload and depression and anxiety? First question. Second question, is that something you see all the time? My biggest concern is mental health, and for people who are doing the vegan diet, is basically they don't have everything they need. So are you, do you think that's causative? Is it causing some mental health issues in the people you're working with? Can you do this mineral balance thing without animal products? Tell me, Marley.
Oh, it's,
I know.
Now we're getting into some very delicate, cause food's become religion. You know that far better than I do. You face that battle every day. I know you do.
And what I want to say is we respect everything you're doing. We're just trying to inform. We're not trying.
No. What really changed nutrition for me was the work of Weston A. Price.
Yeah.
When I first heard that name, I thought my now wife was saying Western A. Price, but of course it's Weston. But that his research was of, it's essential. If people are not familiar with his research, they're missing a major chapter of history. But his going in proposition was that he was seeking to find out what is the diet to make perfect teeth.
Yeah.
And this came on the heels of him, he was a dentist, came on the heels of him doing a root canal for his 10-year-old son who died of the root canal.
I heard.
And so he and his wife wanted to, you know, they spent a decade traveling the globe to find perfect teeth, and they did. But his going in proposition was that people would be vegetarian and they would be low fat.
Yeah.
He was convinced of that. Now, because he was a scientist, he withheld his judgment, and he just studied and monitored, and much to his shock and surprise, he found that the 14 communities that they identified as having perfect teeth all had animal protein, from ants and Maasai tribesmen in Africa to Inuit Indians eating whale blubber and everything in between, and some of these communities had up to 65% of their calories coming from fat.
Wow.
And so very, very high prevalence. He didn't find any blenders.
That's what is it?
No smoothies. There were no smoothies. There were no smoothies back in the 1920s. But what surprised him is he thought it would be a raw vegetarian diet, and everyone cooked their food. That was another surprise for him. So I believe that Weston A. Price had discovered the food that is best, that allows the best Homo sapien expression. For people who want an update of that, get Kate Shanahan's Deep Nutrition.
Yeah.
She's a physician who kind of took Weston A. Price and took it up a notch or two. Wonderful research, wonderful dot connect. I don't know whether she's been on a guest on your show, but she's really savvy. Yeah. But sure. Great, great source of information. And people are always asking me, is there a source of a vegetarian or a vegan way to solve these problems? We've not found one yet. We keep looking. I think where we're at a disadvantage now, Autumn, is that historically people could eat beta carotene and use copper to flip beta carotene into retinol. And there's an enzyme pathway, BCMO, beta carotene monooxygenase. It's a copper dependent pathway. But because the copper levels are so low worldwide, that enzyme's not working right. And it's very rare when it does work. And so I think that's a major glitch. And so if you don't have retinol, you got a serious problem. And I think the animal forms of copper, like bee pollen and beef liver, are essential.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of a non-animal source. And that, I know that's offensive to the vegetarians and the vegans, and it's not meant to be. It's just, unless we can find a comparable source of these nutrients, the body doesn't work right. And our body, as I've come to understand it by studying the research of these phenomenal scientists that go back to the late 1800s, early 1900s. I mean, what they knew about how the body worked is short of amazing. Yeah. But it was essential to have access to these nutrient-dense forms of food, like heavy cream, like butter. What I just discovered the other day is that there's a critical enzyme. It's about this long. I can't even pronounce it. But it breaks down the fats that we're exposed to have a different number of carbons in them, and they go anywhere from 3 carbons all the way up to high 20s. Mm-hmm. Well, the group of C3 carbons to 8 carbons is a very important section of fat, and I think it's C4 or C5 is butter fat.
Okay.
And you cannot break down butter fat unless that enzyme that's this long has copper.
Mm.
It's a copper-dependent enzyme. And that, I believe, is one of the reasons why they took butter out of our diet, because they knew they were lowering copper in the soil through farming practices. They knew they were adding iron filings that then make it very difficult for copper to work in our body. That's the research of Jamie Collins and his colleagues at University of Florida. Very important research. If people think they need iron supplements, read the research of Jamie Collins. You'll throw those bottles away as fast as you can, because they just totally disrupt your metabolism. And if they start taking retinol out, well, then we've lost these immensely important sources of energy and metabolism to allow our body to communicate properly, to signal properly, to move electrons properly. And that's really what this is all about, is vitality is the natural ability to move electrons and do it with great regularity and great precision.
Okay, so you think that this was that someone understands this well enough, and it's kind of like an effort, as opposed to this is like the result of regenerative or destructive environmental practices that's reducing copper.
It makes people nervous when I allude to the fact that it was thought through. Yeah. But someone like Ansel Keys, who you may have heard of, he was a very important physiologist in the 50s. he got his first PhD from Oxford in oceanography. The last time I checked, there's minerals in the ocean. Apparently, he didn't take those classes. But then he gets a second PhD in physiology. Hmm. Okay, so that's a big deal. He's done 2 PhDs, real smart guy. And he's the one who took fat out of our diet. Ansel Keys is the guy. He was the man, the one person who did that. And there's a famous study that he did, the 15-country study, where he jiggered the research to prove that it was fat causing all the problems. Well, he ignored a whole series of other countries that were doing quite fine, thank you very much. And so there's a whole series of Ansel Keys. People are probably now familiar with the fact that in 1967, there was a major study done in the New England Journal of Medicine, done by very high-profile physician researchers, to prove that fat was causing the cholesterol problem. And it was funded by the sugar industry.
Yeah.
And so, wait, what? And so sugar's really bad for us, but they wanted to take the fat out. Well, as soon as they did that, they totally changed the mineral dynamics in the human body.
Yeah.
Most people don't know how enzymes work, and they work just like the cars we drive. When was the last time you drove your car without a key? Well, no. Unless you're Wilma Flintstone or Fred Flintstone, it's hard to drive a car and without a key. But once you put that mineral key into the enzyme, bingo bongo, it knows exactly what to do. Yeah. And what a lot of research will talk about is enzyme deficiencies, or now it's gene deficiencies. And they're not telling you that the missing piece of the puzzle is the mineral.
Mm. Before we grab, we're going to do a little bit more on vitamin A in a second. I know we don't have very long. So you're saying the best sources of copper, beef liver, grass-fed, of course, and bee pollen. Is there anything else that people should be focusing on? Because clearly copper is very important.
The other source that we rely on in the protocol is what we call whole food vitamin C complex, as you can get in supplements. Yes. And so the vitamin C complex has a very important enzyme, tyrosinase, at the core. And that tyrosinase enzyme has four coppers in it. And back in the 50s, that tyrosinase enzyme used to be called thyroxinase. Thyroxinase. And so the thyroid gland, it's important for people to know that the thyroid gland works best when it has access to retinol and copper. And so there's a very important protein that it's called TTR, Tango Tango Romeo, TTR, which stands for trans thyretin. It transports thyroxine and retinol. And if retinol is low, that protein doesn't get made and the thyroid doesn't work right. And so there are many studies that show that when someone is called hypothyroid, the first thing you should think about is, oh, I must be retinol deficient. And when you introduce a really good form of retinol, like the products you're talking about, suddenly the body has the natural ability to make energy and regulate the thyroid.
Ooh, it's such juicy stuff. Because we think thyroid, we think selenium, we think iodine, we forget about vitamin A and copper. So that's awesome. Do you have time for two more questions?
Oh, yeah. I'll take as much time as you want.
Okay, Marley.
You've got the time, I've got the time.
Okay, I have a few more minutes for sure. And I need to ask you about this too, because you talked about it in the beginning. It's something people are so confused about. This vitamin D, just we're going to take it in isolation. We're not going to worry about it. Why is that a terrible idea, Morley? And how should we actually get our vitamin D?
Okay. Another simple question, right?
I know. But yeah, like give us a little like just...
You want a little sound bite, right?
Okay. I do. Okay. Can you do that? I don't know.
I'll do my best. So... whenever you find vitamin A and D in nature, they're always together.
Yeah.
Right? Cod liver oil, it's always together.
Yeah.
And what do you find in cod liver oil? You find 10 parts A to 1 part D.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. Because what's important, again, going back to first principle,
yeah,
what's the oldest hormone on planet Earth? Vitamin D. What's the most powerful hormone on planet Earth? Vitamin D. And now we're taking it like it's candy, completely ignoring the fact that vitamin D needs to be in relationship to vitamin A. And you need a lot of vitamin A in order to make sure that it works right. And what's happened is when you go back into the 1920s and 30s and 40s, they were obsessed with vitamin A. Retinol was the bee's knees, the way vitamin D is today, right?
Yeah.
So retinol was like, it was curing night blindness and all these eye issues. And why? Because retinol is real important for the liver, right? We know it's in the liver.
Yeah.
And there's a connection between the liver and the eye. You know, Chinese medicine.
Just like
there's a connection between the kidney and the ear. It's really important. And so retinol is profoundly important. Well, everyone, the people who are really, you know, really informed like to talk about the vitamin D receptor, VDR, you know. And so what they're not aware of is that vitamin D receptor, it's a nuclear receptor. It's inside the nucleus and there's little receptor sites, and there are 49 of them. Well, most of those 49 receptor sites key off of either RAR, ROR, or RXR. And what does that R stand for? Retinol. Retinoid. It's retinoid A receptors, retinoid O receptors, and they're called retinoid receptors. And the VDR receptor does not work without RXR. Well, here's the other thing that people don't realize is that in order to activate the synthesis of vitamin D, you got to have a lot of that. That's sunshine, right? You know, yeah. Sunshine's what activates the initial step in the tissue to change the cholesterol so that it begins its migration to the liver to become storage D, and then further migration to the kidney to become active D. But none of that happens without magnesium. Mm. So that's something a lot of people don't know about. But the important thing is sunshine does something. There's like the internet commercials. Wait, there's more. So the sunshine activates the breakdown of retinol into what are called retinoids. And so they become retinoic acids. There are at least four different retinoic acids. Those are all hormones, folks. Mm. Those hormones are as powerful as the vitamin D that you think is a vitamin. It's actually a hormone. But there's all trans, 9-cis, 11-cis, and 13-cis retinoic acid that are profoundly important for human metabolism. And then further breakdown are these receptors, these nuclear receptors. And so vitamin D is important. I understand that.
Yeah.
But in my world, vitamin A runs circles around vitamin D. And I've for 10 years, I have been publicly admonishing people for taking vitamin D supplements. And so this woman, Michelle, that I was referring to earlier,
yeah,
who has the kidney stone, who has the osteoporosis, I said, I'm just curious, did you take vitamin D? And she laughed. She said, oh, yes, I was working with this alternative practitioner in Arizona, and he had me on 8,000 units of vitamin D for years. And I said, well, that's where they started. And there are many, many, many examples of people who got kidney stones from that one supplement, not knowing that it really alters physiology. But the important thing is the body is run in relationship. There are these pairs. So calcium and magnesium are running in relationship. Sodium and potassium in relationship.
Yeah.
Everyone's been trained to believe it's copper and zinc. No, scratch that record. It's copper and iron in relationship. Vitamin A and D in relationship, omega-3, omega-6 in relationship. And it's important to always ask if an article is talking about a specific mineral or vitamin or nutrient, if they don't speak about it in relationship to something else, then they don't understand what they're talking about, because it's always in relationship.
I love that. And thank you for clearing that up, because I've even heard doctors say, tell me evidence of someone who's gotten hurt by taking a vitamin D supplement. That is a doctor, and he's, you know, I'm not going to say the name, but this is a pervasive belief. I think it's dangerous. And I think, like you're saying, minerals, vitamins, we all work in combination. There's several forms of vitamin A, which is again why I don't think that synthetics are a great idea. A lot of times we're not converting the beta carotene, like you said, 10 units right to one. And sometimes if you don't have copper, that's not happening. And so many things we could delve into. But I think the last question I want to ask you, Morley, is sum it all up for us. Tell us three steps our listeners can take today to kind of reestablish this mineral balance in their lives. And also tell us about your free gift, which is going to help them do that too.
Right. So people may know that I've been working at this for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. But several years ago, developed what's called the Root Cause Protocol. And people can go to the website, rcp123.org, and just download the manual, the instruction manual. But what the RCP is based on is three things: minerals, vitamin complexes, and nutrient-dense food like cod liver oil and beef liver. Mm-hmm. And so minerals, you know, there's 90-some minerals in the ocean. There's 18 that are considered essential. And what I've really honed in on is there's a hierarchy to these minerals. And the two that I think are preeminent in terms of giving us good health are magnesium and bioavailable copper. And I always put that word bioavailable in front so you know that you need retinol in order to make it bioavailable. And we need to put more restraint on iron. It's a very it's the master pro-oxidant metal in our body. Let that sink in. It means it loves to make rust. And in a body that doesn't have magnesium and bioavailable copper, I assure you that's exactly what it's going to do. So minerals are very important. Vitamin complexes. Retinol is vitamin A. The B complex, it's amazing what they do. Again, the richest sources are beef liver and bee pollen are probably your two best sources. But they exist in other foods as well. But what the B vitamins do, at least as I've come to theorize it, there's not much literature backing it up, but intuitively this makes more sense to me. There's a very close relationship between B vitamins and copper. There's an absolute relationship between niacin and copper, B5 and copper, B6 and copper. Folate has an absolute dependence on copper, B12 and copper. So, you know, people who want to do a one and done Google search aren't going to find that, but that's a decade of research. But copper has a very instrumental role in B vitamins. And what are they doing? They're regulating iron. It's fascinating. The B vitamins have this profound connection to iron and iron metabolism. Then we get to whole food vitamin C. And that would be another great podcast just to focus on. Or did we do that already? I can't remember.
We did vitamin C, which is awesome.
We did. Okay. So it's just an amazing nutrient. And it's profoundly important, especially for managing iron. And then we get to D and E. Well, D, again, has to be in relationship to A. Vitamin E, we haven't really had a chance to talk about vitamin E. It's what's called a chain-breaking antioxidant. That's a very long-winded way of saying it's really powerful. And what vitamin E does is it stops lipid peroxidation in very similar ways that the vitamin A does. And again, when wheat used to be this tall, almost 4 feet tall, there was a lot of nutrients in there. Now wheat is this tall. It's about 18 inches tall. Think that might have affected the minerals and the nutrients in the wheat? Of course it did. And so we live in an era where we are being deprived of these nutrients. And if we don't have the minerals, if we don't have the vitamin complexes, and if we don't have this legacy of nutrient-dense food that has been passed down through the food system, through animals, we are shortchanging our ability to have optimal health.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you. And if you download that Root Cause Protocol, he'll give you a list of starts and a list of stops. So I highly recommend that. And before I let you go, I've been wanting to ask you this forever. And we have a regenerative agricultural meat delivery service. And I've heard some people say that it doesn't matter what the cows are fed, that the nutritional quality of their product in terms of antioxidants and minerals, it's not important, really. The differences aren't really there. I'm wondering your thoughts on that, knowing, understanding minerals as well as you do. And that is my final question.
So what kind of car do you drive?
Ooh, I drive a Mazda.
Okay. Have you ever put kerosene in that Mazda?
No.
Have you ever put molasses in that Mazda?
Not yet.
No? No. Why do you put gasoline in it?
Because it helps it drive.
Right. And there's probably a certain octane that you use so that it has optimal performance, right?
Right.
Okay. So, and a car is pretty simple compared to the metabolism of a cow.
Right.
Or the metabolism of a human. And I think it's profoundly arrogant for people to say that, again, go back to that quintessential scene in Back to the Future, I think it was part two, when Doc comes back with the car and he's hovering over the driveway and he goes over to the garbage can and just starts putting garbage into the car. He said, we found out you could just put anything in it and it works fine.
Yeah.
I think that was subliminal advertising by the food industry saying, it doesn't matter what you take. Just throw the food in. It doesn't matter.
Just get calories.
Just get calories. Right. Calories in, calories out. Mm-hmm. And so my generation, again, I was born in 52. we were raised with the belief that grass-fed butter, grain-fed butter, Crisco, canola oil, and any form of fat were all the same. Didn't matter what it was.
Yeah.
And now what we know, and your whole company is based on this premise that it does matter what the ingredients are at the front end, and it absolutely matters to the cow because the energetic expression of that animal is going to be optimal, just as Weston A. Price discovered that the genetic expression of the Homo sapien is optimized when it has access to lots of fat, has access to purine protein. And it's just, it's like, I just think people are being fundamentally unfair to suggest that it doesn't matter what you eat, it's going to be fine at the back end. And it, look at this nation now. We are a nation where handicapped parking dominates parking lots. Mm-hmm. We are a nation where people my age have up to 8 different prescriptions that they take daily. Wow. I take 0. Okay. And it's just, come on. We've lost sight of, we think about our ancestors. Oh, they were really elderly and sick. And I'm thinking about my grandfather who was 72 when I was born. And I remember vividly the time when I was helping him weed his hill. He's 92, I'm 20. And he's pulling weeds out like there's no tomorrow. But wow. I'm getting tired. And it's like we've lost sight of the vitality that our ancestors had. And what did Dada love to eat? He loved to eat beef liver. He loved his heavy cream. He loved his organ meats. And again, by the grace of God, his daughter, my mom, knew how to cook all those foods. I was raised on that too. But it's like people don't understand that there is a massive difference between grass-fed butter and grain-fed butter, because grass-fed butter will produce omega-3s and grain-fed will produce omega-6s. They're completely different fats.
Right.
And what really matters to that soil is you better be spraying it with minerals like they do in Europe. They use, it's called rock dust, mm-hmm. or you could use, there's different products that you can buy. But if you don't feed the soil, then the produce that's grown on it is going to be compromised. And then the animals feeding on that grass are going to be compromised. One of my favorite lines from Joel Shalaton, who has Polyface Farms in Virginia. I did a pilgrimage to his farm many years ago. I just wanted to experience and meet him. And it was fascinating. But in his famous video, he's lying in the grass and he grabs all the different forms of grass. And he says, I'm a grass farmer. And he has a bouquet. He says, I like to feed my animals a salad. And he takes it very seriously that he wants to have this diversity of different forms of grass so that they get the full benefit of what Mother Nature has to offer. I don't know. I think it's so basic. And we tend to get lost in the esoterica of different nutraceuticals. And it's like, well, let's get back to first principles. Yeah. Let's get back to the soil, feeding it right, getting the grass and allowing the produce and the animals to have their fullest expression.
I love it. Marley, you've been amazing. And everyone, take him up on this offer, this root cause protocol. When I found it first, maybe a year ago now, I was just blown away by not only the research that went into it. Marley's literally spent thousands of dollars buying these journal articles. Like, people don't do that. Your doctors don't have time to do that. Like, this is an exceptional offering. And he makes it simple. That's the best part about it, is it well-researched, but here's some starts. Here's something to start doing. Here's some things to stop doing. So again, thank you, Marley. And yes, let's have you back. Magnesium Man, I mean, come on. We could do a lot of podcasts, and I know our guests always love you. So will you come back on?
Oh, I would love it. These are always fun. You're a very high energy person, which I really enjoy that. Yes, great questions. And I know you've got a very loyal following that are anxious and hungry for this information. So I'm delighted to be a part of this process. It's really a lot of fun.
Okay, awesome, Morley. Well, again, thank you guys, and check out the gift now. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Optimized Paleo Podcast by Paleo Valley. We hope you got a lot out of today's show and can apply these principles to your life. If you did, we would love if you would leave us a review on iTunes. When you leave a review, it helps more people find us so we can get this information to those who need it most.
And if you want to transform your health in just 28 days, we'd love for you to try our brand new program, Radiate in 28, written by our very own holistic nutritionist, certified psychology of eating coach, former celebrity fitness trainer, and my wife, Autumn Smith. Go visit radiatein28.com right now, and we'll ship you the Quick Start book for free. All we ask is that you chip in a few bucks to help cover the cost of shipping, and we'll cover the cost of your book.
And above all else, please remember, we're here to serve you. So if you have comments or questions or suggestions for the show, please reach out to me at autumn@paleovalley.com. Thanks for listening.